We are very happy to have our Pilgrim brother, Brother Sam Baker, with us. And Brother Baker has chosen as his subject the topic, Elijah's Message. Elijah's Message by Brother Baker.
I'm very happy, friends, to have this privilege of being with you in convention once more. We bring you the love and greetings from our little group in Toronto, Canada. The prophet Isaiah, in chapter 6, verse 2, said that darkness covered the earth and gross darkness the people. Rotherham puts the gross darkness as deep gloom. We're not going to talk about the deep gloom, but we do think that it very aptly describes present world conditions. However, applying the Apostle Paul's method of Bible study, that is, to rightly divide the word of truth, we turn to the prophet Daniel. And Daniel speaks about a time when great enlightenment will come to the world. Daniel calls it the time of the end, when knowledge shall be increased. Indeed, Daniel goes into a great deal of detail, and we might say he spells it out in days, that is, prophetic days. He says, blessed is he that waiteth and cometh to the 1,335 days. To some, this time will be a blessed time of great enlightenment, a revelation of the divine plan of God. To many others, however, this increase of knowledge will precipitate a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation. We stand here today in the midst of these prophetic days. And to you, my dear brethren, these are blessed days of fellowship in the Spirit. Not only the days that we spend here at Bloomington, but all the days of our lives since we came into a knowledge of the truth. All the years of our lives, because these are prophetic days, they mean years. Our annual convention is a kind of a touchstone or checkup, perhaps, of our progress in the narrow way in the school of Christ. And when we leave here next Friday, we trust we will have been blessed with a greater faith, a brighter hope, and a stronger resolve to carry on the work we have undertaken to do for the Lord until we experience our change. In other words, we will endeavor to be faithful to our stewardship as a result of our being here. A few weeks ago, in the June the 13th, to be correct, in the Indiana News, I read a little article where the president of this university was speaking to the graduating class. And it mentions here that the class consisted of 4,000 853 graduates. Mr. Starr said in his speech, he asked these graduates to stand shoulder to shoulder and join ranks to overcome the problems of the 20th century society. Now, no one can deny that the 20th century society has many problems, and we do not think that the graduates from this or any other college will be able to solve all of these problems. Mr. Starr also said that the students ought not to waste time blaming their elders for world conditions. We know that these world conditions were foretold many centuries ago. Even Daniel spoke about the time in which we live. Great stress is laid upon youth and education today. And in a recent bank forecast on credit risks, the bank paper stated that by 1980, about 70% of the population would be heads of families of 25 years of age and under. And they would be buying all kinds of needful things such as homes, automobiles, household equipment for which they need credit. The question was, how good would the credit be for 70% who are 25 years of age and under? Robert Kennedy, about the same time in speaking in Toronto, Canada, said because of the population explosion, he made this statement, "Very soon, it will be just one step from the college campus to the White House." And he said there will be enough of the age bracket to elect a president graduating from college. You can use your imagination a little bit, and you will find that it will precipitate, we think, much greater trouble than there is in the world today. Every year, there are thousands of young men and women graduating from colleges all over the world. Their education, however, will have very little of the basic principles of true Christianity. We would like to mention one young man of many years ago, what the prophets had said about him. We read that he was numbered with the transgressors. He was despised and rejected of men. He was led as a lamb to the slaughter. They saw no beauty in him that they should desire him. They crowned him with thorns. They sold him for 30 pieces of silver, and they crucified him. This young man was the senior member of God's family, the firstborn from the dead, the heir of God. He was God's greatest steward, and he was a faithful steward of the things entrusted to him. He has left us a most wonderful example of faithfulness to stewardship. The prophetic writings of some of God's earlier stewards are at our disposal. They are there for our good. And I'd like to read a statement from one in the New Testament. This These are the words of the Apostle Paul to Timothy. In 2 Timothy, 3rd chapter, Paul says, "This know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come. Men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof." Who can say that these words are not true today? We would like to now call attention briefly to a prophetic statement from the prophet Joel. Here we read in the 3rd chapter, "Behold, in those days," and we suggest that these days are the days that Daniel talked about, "in these days and at that time when I shall bring again the captivity of Judah and Jerusalem, I will also gather all nations and will bring them down into the valley of Jehoshaphat and will plead with them there for my people and for my heritage Israel, whom they have scattered among the nations and parted my land," God's land. "Proclaim ye this among the Gentiles," that is the Gentile nations, "prepare war, wake up the mighty men, let all the men of war draw near, let them come up and beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears, and let the weak say, I am strong. Assemble yourselves, come all ye heathen, and gather yourselves round about. Thither cause thy mighty ones to come down, O Lord. Let the heathen be wakened and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat, for there will I sit to judge all the heathen round about. Put you in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come, get ye down, for the press is full, the fats overflow, their wickedness is great. Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision, for the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. The sun and the moon shall be darkened, and the stars shall withdraw their shining." This is but another picture of the day in which we are living. Also, Jesus' words in Luke 21st chapter, "Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. And there shall be signs in the sun, in the moon, and in the stars." Joel spoke about the sun, the moon, the stars. "Distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them for fear and for looking after those things coming upon the earth, for the powers of the heaven shall be shaken." We suggest, friends, the powers of the heavens, the sun, moon, and the stars, will represent the fact that not only the political, financial, social world, national world, is in trouble, but the religious world, represented by the powers of heaven and the sun, the moon, the stars. They are all included in what we speak about as our present-day civilization. Jesus also said, "To this end was I born, and for this cause came I into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth." We as Christian followers may not find ourselves in prophetic writings as did Jesus, but we do have Jesus' invitation to be his witnesses, and that means to bear witness to the truth. If we are witnesses for Jesus and bear witness for him, then we are stewards of this truth, and we should prove faithful stewards. Since we are living in the time of the end, the days of Daniel spoken of by this prophet, and we have Jesus' testimony also, that conditions that mark the time of the end, we are justified, we believe, in looking for some evidence of fulfillment of some of these prophecies. In the Toronto Globe and Mail earlier this year, in fact, it was to be exact May the 5th edition, a statement here I would like to call your attention to. The Right Reverend George Luxton, Anglican Bishop of Huron, said yesterday he expects the Roman Catholic Church to recognize Anglican orders within 5 years. Bishop Luxton, in an interview at the close of the three-day diocese synod, said the recognition of Anglican orders would be a major first step toward union of the two communions. The bishop talked with the Pope in November about the Roman Catholic Church stand on Anglican orders. When he returned to Canada, he prepared an official request in English and in Latin, asking the Pope to review the matter. The bishop also asked that the Pope revoke the sentence of excommunication passed by Pope Pius V in 1570 on Queen Elizabeth I. He said that if Anglican orders are declared valid by the Roman Catholic Church, it will create a better climate for union. Brethren, I'm suggesting that when this time comes, which is not far away, it would seem as though the image of a beast would be due to receive some light. Furthermore, just recently, in fact, about 10 days ago, in a recent radio broadcast, the Pope has been asked to take a more active role in world political affairs and national affairs. And I want to suggest that when he did come last year and talk to the world, it is as though that power, that head government that had gone into the abyss, had just taken a look with his head above the abyss and looked around to see how matters stood, like sometimes animals will poke their head out of the hole first before they come all the way out. And I'm suggesting that he's coming all the way out very soon. This is important. It is one of the events that is being fulfilled, and a historical event or prophetic event that is being fulfilled. Now, I haven't said anything about Elijah's message. I want to suggest that Elijah had a message at three different times, and it is our privilege today to present the Elijah message to the world. I want to read the message of Malachi, in the last chapter, Malachi 4, verses 5 and 6. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord, and he shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children, and the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. This is the last prophecy of the Old Testament, the end of the prophets. Has this prophecy been fulfilled? And if so, by whom and when? This is important for us today. In the 17th chapter of Matthew, following the account of the Transfiguration on the Mount, we are told of a question asked of Jesus by his disciples. And when they came down from the mountain, Jesus charged them, saying, "Tell the vision to no man until the Son of Man be risen from the dead." And his disciples asked him, saying, "Why then, say the scribes, Elias must first come?" And Jesus answered and said unto them, "Elias truly shall first come and restore all things. But I say unto you that Elias is come already. And they knew him not, but have done unto him whatsoever they listed. Likewise shall also the Son of Man suffer of them." Elias is the Greek name for Elijah. Elijah is the Hebrew name, and Elias is the same character in Greek. And the fact that he is mentioned 30 times in the New Testament, we think is wonderful, ample proof that he is typical. In Luke, the first chapter, the angel Gabriel, who announced to Zacharias about the birth of John the Baptist, he said, Luke 16:17, "And many of the children of Israel shall he turn to the Lord their God, and he shall go before him in the spirit and the power of Elias, to turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, and the disobedient to the wisdom of the just, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord." Matthew 11th chapter, Jesus is speaking of John the Baptist, and in verse 10 he says, "This is he of whom it is written, Behold, I send you my messenger before thy face, which shall prepare thy way before thee." Now this is a quotation from Matthew, Malachi 3:1. Verse 13, "For all the prophets and the law prophesied until John." Verse 14, "And if ye will receive it, this is Elias, which was to come, if ye will receive it." If, as Paul says, the things written aforetime were written for us, what help may we get from this prophecy of Malachi? Jesus said, "John is Elias or Elijah, if ye will receive it." And in these words, "if ye will receive it," we have a challenge to our faith. In John chapter 1, the priests and the Levites asked John the Baptist, "Art thou Elias?" And John said, "I am not." But Jesus said, "This John is Elias, if you can receive it." Evidently, there is more to this than appears on the surface. And we suggest that these words of Jesus, "if ye can receive it," is very important and interesting to us today. Jesus did not pronounce any punishment upon any who might not receive his message or could not see that John the Baptist fulfilled the prophecy of Malachi. And likewise today, our brethren may be divided on some questions, But we should each be fully persuaded in our own minds. If you can receive it, well and good. If there is something you cannot understand, I do not think there is any punishment attached to our not being able to receive it. Now, to understand the deeper meaning, we must put the man in the background and not think about the individual, but think of a work represented by a man. Note the work as shown in these words: "He shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children, and the heart of the children to their fathers, lest or else I come and smite the earth with a curse." John the Baptist's work, preaching and baptizing, prepared the people to receive Jesus. As we know, John identified Jesus. That was his work. Jesus as the Messiah. And he announced that Jesus' work would increase, but John's would decrease. However, John's work did not accomplish a sufficient reformation that would forestall the smiting with a curse upon Israel of John's time. The combined work of both John and Jesus left the nation of Israel so hardened by the religious rulers of that time that 40 years after their work, God permitted the complete overthrow of the nation by Titus in AD 73. Going back further to Elijah of old, the type, we may recall that Israel was completely given over to idolatry at that time. The worship of Baal was the particular god or idol at the time of the reign of Ahab and Jezebel. We are all familiar with Elijah's challenge to the priests of Baal as to who was God in Israel. And we will not take time to mention what the test was, because you are familiar with it. We will simply mention Elijah's prayer to God as recorded in 1 Kings 18, verse 37. "Hear me, O Lord, hear me, that this people may know that thou art the Lord God, and that thou hast turned their heart back again." This was Elijah's work, and it is the type on which John the Baptist's work was to follow. And John the Baptist did not completely fulfill the work typified by Elijah of old. After this prayer by Elijah, we know that the fire did come from God and consumed the sacrifice. This was a very wonderful, momentous occasion for the entire people of Israel when they did realize that their God was not Baal, but was Jehovah. And thus we say that the nation of Israel were Jehovah's Witnesses that he was God, and it was demonstrated then by Elijah that Jehovah was Israel's God and not Baal. However, Elijah's work was successful in a measure only, and to a degree, and for a time limited. Israel returned to idol worship. The prophet Jeremiah, in speaking for the Lord about Israel and their sins, he pronounced God's judgment against the nation in the time of Zedekiah, the last king. The final judgment is pronounced by Ezekiel in Ezekiel 21, verses 25 to 27. We know, you remember what the pronouncement was, "Thou profane and wicked prince, whose time has come that iniquity must have an end, remove the crown, take off the crown, remove the diadem, this shall not be the same," and so on. Now, God continued to send prophets to Israel, and the last prophet being Malachi, and his prophecy was between 300 and 400 years before the coming of John the Baptist. No wonder the nation of Israel were somewhat excited when John the Baptist began to preach. No prophet for such a long time, and the last prophet had said that God would send Elijah, and so the natural question was, "Are you Elijah?" Matthew 3:1-2, "In those days came John the Baptist preaching in the wilderness of Judea, and saying, Repent ye, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand." Since there had been no prophet for so long, we realize that the excitement caused by John. Notice now something that is interesting here. If, as Paul says, the things written aforetime were written for our learning, upon whom the end of the age would come, then this prophecy, the last to Israel, must reveal something for us. It stands out prominently as a marker or a sign no less important than Daniel's signs of the increase of knowledge and the time of trouble and running to and fro, all of which follow as a result of Michael standing up. That's what Daniel said. Michael would stand up. Now, as John's preaching was powerful and it drew large crowds from cities and towns, and many repented and were baptized, thus was a people prepared to receive Jesus. But not all who came were received by John, who declared of some who came, "O generation of vipers, who hath warned you to flee from the wrath to come?" He says, "Bring forth therefore fruits meet for repentance." We think that this, perhaps this, like some who join religious organizations today, it's the popular thing to do, it's good for business. And so many were being baptized then by John, that some came whom John knew were not repentant. Let us notice the trouble which followed the ministry of both John and Jesus when the nation was overthrown and scattered by Titus in AD 73, was ample proof that the smiting of the earth, Israel's portion of the earth, was the curse that God had foretold in the prophecy of Malachi. This also was the baptism of fire which foretold by John. The most important application of this prophecy of Malachi, however, is for the end of the gospel age, and is of vital importance to us. The prophecy is a very special reference and application to the Lord's second advent, to the coming of the messenger of the covenant in glory and power. Malachi 3, "Behold, I will send you my messenger. He shall prepare the way before me, and the Lord whom ye seek shall suddenly come to his temple, even the messenger of the covenant whom ye delight in. Behold, he shall come, saith the Lord of hosts. But who may abide the day of his coming? Who shall stand when he appeareth? For he is like a refiner's fire, like fuller's soap. He shall sit as a refiner and purifier of silver. He shall purify the sons of Levi, and purge them as gold and silver, that they may offer unto the Lord an offering in righteousness. It is these that do the great witness work before the work of the kingdom in glory. And so, brethren, just as Elijah in the time of Ahab and Jezebel did a wonderful work in turning the hearts of the nation of Israel to Jehovah their God, likewise, John the Baptist did a work for Israel in Jesus' day to prepare a people to receive Jesus at his first advent. What a wonderful work is left at the end of the gospel age for the church in the flesh, as the Elijah or Elias of our day, to prepare some people to receive Jesus at his second advent when he comes in power and glory. This is part of our work. It is our message to the world today. And we are the feet of the Christ, have a message as spoken by Jeremiah, Isaiah 52:7. How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him that bringeth good tidings, that publisheth peace, that bringeth good tidings of good, that publisheth salvation, that saith unto Zion, Thy God reigneth. Our message today is an Elijah message, typified by Elijah of old, further confirmed by John the Baptist, whom Jesus said is Elias, if you can receive it. And we are declaring today to the world that Jesus, the King, has returned in power and glory. And if you can receive it, we are Elias or Elijah. We have a message to proclaim to the world, and that is our chief business. And I suggest, brethren, the feet of him are spoken of as beautiful, but only beautiful if they're declaring the message of truth, Thy God reigneth. And may the Lord give us grace and strength and help so that we can complete the work that has been entrusted to us and be faithful stewards of this truth. May the Lord bless you.